The Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast is brought to you by Triple Threat Sports. For all your team outfitting needs, call Chris at 708-478-6090. The Black Oak and Oak Lawn, the South Suburbs' finest casual upscale dining, and Marishka's in Crest Hill, family-owned and operated since 1933. Let's drop the trade deadline puck.
Welcome to the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast with NBCChicago.com's James Naveau and 670 The Score's hockey guy, Jay Zawoski.
Here I am, Chicago!
Welcome into a trade deadline spectacular edition of the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast. My name is James Naveau from NBC Chicago and The Athletic Chicago. And with me, as always, hasn't been traded yet, and it looks like he's safe for another trade deadline. Jay Zawoski is 670 The Score. Jay, Blackhawks making some moves this week. They actually added some pieces, despite what Stan Bowman said about, I like where we're at.
Well, I think he probably did like where they're at, but when, you know, certain opportunities present themselves, like Johnny Oduya, that's a name we've been hearing from a lot of our emailers as the year went on. People saw Dallas falling out of it. They know he's unrestricted. It was sort of a natural conclusion to draw. As of yesterday, I wasn't too sure that it was going to get done, and then it picked up steam last night. And, I overall, very positive about what the Hawks did at the deadline. They gave up no assets. They gave up low draft picks, and they got two players that can legitimately help them on the way, you know, to a Stanley Cup. Johnny Oduya, we know, has great chemistry with Nicholas Jalmerson. I think he's taken a step back. I think you probably think he's taking a step back. Most people do. But Stan Bowman today said, this is the same guy we had 2 years ago. So if Oduya's healthy, Bowman expects him to be that same guy and to play with Nicholas Jalmerson when he returns. So if he's even a shadow of that, it's an absolute home run to trade Mark McNeil, who was doing literally nothing in Rockford.
And literally, he had every chance in the world to crack this rotation. He couldn't do it. And that tells you everything you need to know about how the Blackhawks.
And I don't know if you saw, John Dietz wrote a piece about McNeil, probably I think about a week ago or so, with quotes from Ted Dent, the Rockford head coach, saying that his problem is focus. His problem is sort of, you know, sticking with it and getting over the mental hurdles of things. He's got the ability, he's got the talent, he just can't seem to get his head into the game. Well, that's something that's really difficult to fix. You know, people's personalities don't change. And maybe McNeil, I think we're looking at another Jack Skilly type that if he does make it to the NHL, it's going to be in a very, very limited role.
Yeah, and I mean, you're not looking at a guy who has superstar potential by any stretch. Because like I said, if the Blackhawks thought that he had a ounce of potential to thrive in their system, he would have gotten a shot this year. But he never came up. And to me, that tells you that they look at guys like Tanner Caro and Ryan Hartman and Vinny Hinostroza and Dennis Rasmussen and Richard Panik. They look at all of those guys as better fits for their system. Tells you everything you need to know about the former first-round pick. And doesn't shock me at all that he was used in a trade like this.
Yeah, and to get a legitimate asset in Johnny Oduya, it's a great move. And even if that does become a third-round pick, that means the Hawks did very well in the playoffs, and I don't think anyone's upset about that
correct.
At all. So, all in all, I like the whole thing. We've seen one game of Thomas Yurko, is that correct? One or two? I think just one.
Yep, only one. He played against St. Louis on Sunday.
Here's my grand conclusion. My grand conclusion on Thomas Yurko is he's fast, and he can have the puck, but then he skates into a defenseman and loses the puck. That's what I've seen from him so far. Obviously I'm kidding, but you know, he's got some skill if he can put it together here. Like we talked about when the trade broke during the last podcast, a very similar to Richard Panik situation. Give up, you know, a guy with some upside, give up very little to get him, and if you make something out of him, great, and if not, no big loss.
And it's a third-round pick. It's not like, I get the idea that third-round picks teams should be able to hit on, you know, occasionally get a good player in that spot in the draft, but it's also not like a guaranteed thing at all. Especially where the Blackhawks are hoping to be picking. They're hoping to be picking the back end of the third round, like around pick number, it'll be like 90, 91 this year because you have Vegas added into the mix. So Blackhawks are hoping that they're picking toward the back end of the third round, and that pick's not really going to matter. So that a third round pick for that is basically meaningless. What I thought was interesting today was listening to people bring up the fact that Thomas Vanek from the Red Wings basically was the exact same return as Thomas Yurko. And it made me wonder, aside from like potential cap issue, maybe, why wouldn't the Blackhawks maybe go for Vanek instead of Thomas Yurko? I have a thought on that, but I'm interested to hear what you have.
My initial thought with that is that they really think that Yurko can be someone they can keep around long term. This summer, he's going to be a restricted free agent. They will have the opportunity to re-sign him. It's very unlikely he's going to sign for anything more than $1 million, if I doubt it's even that much. As opposed to Vanek, who's an unrestricted free agent who had a good year in Detroit and will probably look to make some money this summer. They would trade it for a guy that they can keep around if they choose to. And I, obviously Vanek's a better player. There's no doubt about it. But I like sort of the long view here from the Hawks. We talk about this all the time. A team is pressed against the cap as the Blackhawks are. They need inexpensive talent. And if
you need guys like Richard Panik who are going to come in and provide you cheap help and have controllable contracts and controllable contract situations.
Exactly right. And that is exactly what Yurko is now, and it's exactly what he will be next year if the Hawks decide to keep him. I'm assuming they're going to. That was not a name on a lot of people's radar, but you saw Pierre LeBrun said Yurko's the guy the Blackhawks have wanted for some time. So that's not just like let's see what we can do at the deadline. That's someone they targeted. That's someone they think they can make into something.
They identified
exactly
them.
Right.
Yep.
So, yeah, go ahead.
Were you a little bit surprised the Blackhawks didn't end up moving Ville Poca at the trade deadline? And I knew there was a lot of, like, kind of smoke around him that they were maybe, like, offering him up for another prospect or two, or maybe like a decent draft pick or something. Are you a little bit surprised that they're going to hold on to him?
Just because of the smoke recently. I don't think there's any problem with holding on to him. Again, he's another guy, correct me if I'm wrong, will be a restricted free agent this summer.
You are correct.
And, when they say they're shopping guys, say they, because Mark McNeil's name was there too, if McNeil and Poca are the guys you're dangling, it all depends on which team you're talking to. Maybe one team wants a defenseman, one team wants a forward. So it's possible that just because he was dangled out there doesn't mean they necessarily wanted to trade him or needed to trade him, but it was a piece they were willing to move to get what they wanted. So I'm not totally surprised. If they moved him for a pick, it wouldn't have shocked me either. But I don't think they're necessarily like, we have to rid ourselves of Ville Poca. I didn't get that sense at all. I did sort of get that sense with McNeil, though.
Do you think you have a chance to see him maybe get moved at the draft, like maybe get like packaged with Marcus Kruger and the Blackhawks try to shed some cap space and maybe try to get a decent draft pick and a prospect? Do you think that's something you could see happening?
I really don't eliminate anything with Bowman. I think that he's always several steps ahead of where the fans are thinking, where even the media is thinking. He's got a plan. It's clear, and sometimes it's tough to see in the present time. But as time goes on, you see it unfold, and I know that if there's a way he can make the team better, he has considered it. He's looked into it, and a great example of that is what happened yesterday when he re-signed Michael Roosevelt and Jordan Tutu. My initial response was, why?
Why? But then you think about it for a second, and then all of a sudden makes all the sense in the world.
Yes, you're a much more eloquent man than I am, so I'm going to put you on the spot and see if you can sort of explain to the listeners why that move made sense when considering the expansion draft coming up.
Simply put, this move gives them two more players now that will be eligible to be taken in the expansion draft, and it gives them the opportunity to protect Ryan Hartman instead of having to expose him to the draft. That's pretty much the only reason you would re-sign Jordan Tutu at this point. Very cheap deal. I think it's only like $600K. Roosevelt is $650. I think Tutu is $700. I think they both signed very cheap deals for next year. Clearly, all it is making them, they're going to be exposed for the expansion draft. They wanted to make sure they could protect Ryan Hartman, and this deal gives them the opportunity to do that. And I don't think it's likely that either of those guys were to get picked, but it at least fulfills the requirements the Blackhawks had to have guys who had 40 NHL games and 70 total experience games as the exposed guys. And I think that was the big reason for the signing, and they're cheap enough that it totally makes sense to do it if it means you can keep Ryan Hartman.
And correct me if I'm wrong, I saw this somewhere and I should have written it down, but isn't it true that Roosevelt could be waived before the season penalty free? Or
yes.
Just outright
yes,
released?
Can. Well, if you waive him you're not on the hook for any money because he's below the $900,000 right. threshold. So, I mean, it makes all the sense in the world to me. The Blackhawks just say, hey, Mike, thanks for that. We're going to go ahead and waive you and send you to Rockford. And if you want to play in Rockford, that's great. If you want us to, you know, release you, we can do that too. The Blackhawks aren't going to try to dick him around. They're going to let him do what he wants to do if he's not really part of their future plan for
next
season. And
there's a thing that we all need to keep in mind when things like this happen. And we look at Roosevelt sort of as like a video game character. Like, this is just a guy, and all we know him as is a person that plays hockey, and we know he doesn't do it very well anymore. He's a guy that Joel Quenneville adores. He's a guy that the teammates like to have around. He's been in the league forever because he's 900 years old, as we know.
He's doing the job
with a lot of experience
for what they need him to
do.
It's a guy that,
and yes, it'd be better to have someone younger. That would be more ideal. But for what they use Michael Roosevelt for, he's fine.
Yeah, that's pretty much nailed it right on the head, and that's, I think, exactly why they feel comfortable giving him the deal that they have. And you know, I don't really look at him as a guy next season that you're going to be particularly worried about. No, he's making $650K. They can bury that money if they need to. It's not going to be an issue.
Exactly. So Ryan Hartman is protected. That is a huge win. I would pay, just over $1 million to protect Ryan Hartman. I think that's worthwhile, and that's pretty much what the Hawks did. So,
and he's under contract for next season, so they don't have to worry about saving up money to re-sign him. They will have to re-sign guys like Panic and Yurko and Tanner Caro, but Ryan Hartman not on that list.
Yep, and none of those guys either are going to make. You could probably get all those guys wrapped up for what, 4, 5?
Yeah, if that. I mean,
that's pretty
solid.
The
only guy I can see really getting a decent sized pay bump would be Richard Panik. That'd be it.
But if you're an opposing GM, are you investing a lot of money in Richard Panik? Have you seen enough to say this is a guy I'm going to give $3-4 million to?
No. And honestly, like, what's the incentive to do that? I mean, you can find guys who can score 15, 20 goals. You can find them for relatively cheap. It's not like you need to potentially give up draft picks to do that. I don't think that opposing GMs are going to be necessarily lining up to do that.
I agree. We're on the same page.
Well, that's boring.
Well, I know today you wrote about the trade deadline looking at the division. Let's discuss that. Let's see who got better, who got worse, who stayed the same. But, man, you know, I saw a tweet today speaking about the division that said, if they get hot, the Golden Knights can catch the Avalanche. It's ridiculous.
Yes, because the Golden Knights officially today can make moves now. Apparently,
yeah,
they made their last payment to the NHL. They are now eligible to make moves.
How funny is that? Like, really, if they started playing today, in theory, they could catch.
They could.
They could catch the Avalanche.
I mean, it would all be a matter of, obviously, getting enough players to actually field a team. But still, I mean, it's kind of cool, though, that, like, you have a team. Like, we really have 31 teams now. Like, this is a real thing.
Yeah.
So,
well, here, all right, let's say this. Right now, in a 7-game series, would you take the as-assembled Vegas Golden Knights or the Avalanche?
Probably the Avalanche, since the Knights really don't have anything yet.
All right, Avs in 7, but it's going to take overtime.
They're literally going to be playing, like, the front office.
Yeah. George McPhee can snap off a wrister now and again, so to
speak.
Yeah. Speaking of that, did you see Theo Epstein taking batting practice?
He hit Dempster pretty good a couple of times. I mean,
I'm just surprised Dempster didn't walk him.
Once Dempster started throwing that split finger, though, oof. That pitch had some movement on it. He might be a little bit dangerous for Team Canada come World Baseball Classic time.
You're not even going to acknowledge my great joke about Ryan Dempster?
Nope, I'm ignoring it.
It's gold. That's all I got. I can't do anything better than that, so I'm just not getting a laugh from you, apparently.
You know what? Why don't we... What? I'm trying not to let your ego get too big here, man. Let's be honest. Okay, so I did a out of 5 stars rating on each one of the Central Division teams at the trade deadline.
Okay.
I gave 2 of the teams 4 out of 5 stars, and that was the highest rating I gave out. Which 2 teams did I give that to?
I'm going to say the Blackhawks.
Correct.
And the Predators?
No, I gave the Predators 3 out of 5.
Okay. Fill me in.
I gave 4 out of 5 stars to Dallas. because Dallas acquired a crap ton of picks for a lot of guys that are not going to really be part of their future. They got a pick from the Blackhawks. They got a good pick from Anaheim. They got a prospect from Columbus. They got a pick from Montreal. I think they did a nice job of acquiring picks and prospects. And, I mean, do you really think Jordy Benn is going to be the key to a Stanley Cup run next season?
Yes.
You really think they were going to retain Patrick Eves or Lauri Korpikoski? No. I think the Stars did a really good job considering the situation that they found themselves in.
Okay, fair point.
Yeah.
You mentioned the Predators. You gave, what, 3.5?
Three, yep.
Okay, tell me why. There's a dryer buzzing.
I gave the Predators 3 because I didn't really feel like there was a move out there that they could do to really improve the team a whole hell of a lot. But acquiring P.A. Parenteau, I know that a lot of people wanted him in Chicago. Would have been a really nice depth piece in the bottom six forwards. I think that's exactly what Nashville needed. So I think that was a solid trade for them. So I gave them 3 out of 5.
That's fair, especially right under the deadline they got him in. It looked like the deadline had expired and they didn't do anything. But Parenteau is a nice addition. Some offense that's been underrated for a lot. It's a guy that's been around. Never a big superstar, but has always consistently scored. And Blackhawks legend P.A. Parenteau,
yes.
Again, remind people.
I also gave one other team in the division 3 out of 5 stars. Can you guess who it is?
The Blues.
Incorrect. I only gave them 2, actually.
Okay.
Because
that narrows it down.
I looked at the trade. It was a fair move, I think, what they got for Kevin Shattenkirk. But looking at what some other teams got for like players who aren't as good as Shattenkirk is, I feel like the Blues maybe had to undersell a little bit.
Just okay, because, tell me the rest.
Because teams that, you know, they kind of knew that St. Louis was kind of in a position where they had to trade him. So I think the Blues didn't really have any leverage. And they did a decent job, but not a great one. And I obviously think it hurts them for the short term, too.
Okay. What do you got? The Jets and Avalanche.
The Jets and the Avalanche both got 2 out of 5. The Jets and the Avs have the same issue. They don't know whether they want to rebuild or not. And I know the trade deadline is not a really good time to start a teardown of a team, but at the same time, neither team really has a direction, do they?
No, absolutely not.
I mean, I know the Avs, you're going to get a better return for Matt Duchene and Gabriel Landeskog if you trade them near the draft or something like that, or maybe like a Tyson Barrie, maybe. But I really do feel like the Avalanche, they need to decide what they want to do. Clearly what they're doing now is not working, and I feel like Joe Sakic just keeps like spinning his wheels and he's not really doing anything to make the team better. So that's more an indictment of their front office approach than necessarily just what they did at the deadline.
Yeah, that's fair. And you know, we heard the rumors of Duchene and earlier in the year Landeskog, and they've got all this young talent. Like you said, and they just don't know what the hell to do with it.
And yet, they can't get it figured out at all.
Well, this is my thing. Like, I'm glad that sports are getting smarter. You know, front offices are getting more. And I'm not just, especially in hockey, I'm not a stats wonk where I just like, well, his Corsi says he's good, so he's good. I don't really believe that. I think the eye test has a lot of value in hockey. But with this movement towards analytics, you're getting coaching hires and GM hires that are not like, well, this guy, he's a former Avalanche and he knows what it means to wear the navy, mauve, and gray. Like, you know what I mean? That's so dumb. Like, Joe Sakic was a great player. Congratulations. You know, Steve Yzerman's like the one real exception to the rule of former player as GM. You know, Dale Talon did a good job as a GM, there's no doubt, but he was never a star player just brought in for his, you know, because, well, he understands what it means to be an Av. No, he was a guy that, first he was a broadcaster, dabbled in front office stuff, and was named GM. And, he earned it, and over time, he improved big time.
Yeah.
I think the era of naming the former star player a coach or GM, it's starting to go away, and I think that's a good thing.
I completely agree. The other team I gave 3 out of 5 stars to was Minnesota. I feel like if Martin Hanzel ends up working out and they can get him to play as a top six winger, that makes the Wild a very, very good team and one of the top 3 or 4 teams in the NHL. But if he doesn't and he has to move back to center, that price tag was a little excessive considering they gave up 3 draft picks and a prospect to get him.
Yeah, and they're already a really good team, and they already have a really good chance at winning a Stanley Cup. And
yes,
yeah,
they
they're probably better with Martin Hanzel, but I don't think he's going to be, when we look back on it, if the Wild do win the Stanley Cup,
it wasn't because of him.
Exactly right. Martin Hanzel was the difference between a cup. Of course, depth, we've talked, the last few weeks we've mentioned this about the Hawks, is the reason they've been able to win is because they've had such depth.
Mm-hmm.
And Hanzel makes them a deeper team for sure.
Yep.
Definitely. So I'm glad. I like when teams go for it. I'm a big fan of what the Wild did. I love that the Caps said, we're really good, let's get even better, and went and got Kevin Shattenkirk.
Yeah, they did.
I like the Toronto. Brian Boyle's a nice player, not a huge difference maker in my mind.
Right.
But that sends a great message to a young team at the trade deadline of saying, look, we're going to go for it. We're going to try to get a guy that's going to help us right now with playoff experience and leadership and blah, 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 all those things you need during a cup run. And they went and got Brian Boyle. I like that. I was a little
shocked they gave up Frankie Corrado in that trade to get Eric Fair. That surprised me a little bit.
Yeah, that was strange. That was sort of strange. And that was another one of those last minute, like, is Eric Fair going to...
Yeah.
That guy's just a total journeyman.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't really add much aside from, here I am on the ice doing things.
I am taking up space.
Yeah. All right, well, I like that. That was good. Good writing.
Thank
good writing, Dickie.
Yeah, I did a good thing.
You did. You did a good thing.
Now I have to ask you the big question. Who is the team to beat after the trade deadline in the NHL? Who do you think is the best team in the league?
I think it's the Washington Capitals still. And I know that their history is, sucking in the playoffs or choking in the playoffs. They've got the best goalie. They've got a world-class set of forwards, including maybe the best player in the league in Alex Ovechkin.
Yep.
They've solidified their blue line with Kevin Shattenkirk. If they're healthy, to me, they're the team to beat, at least in the Eastern Conference. You can't forget about
Pitch. And Brayden Holtby's really good, too. Brayden Holtby's an awesome goaltender.
Yes, I mentioned that. Thanks for listening to the show, jerk.
You actually cut out a little bit on my Skype, so I'll blame that.
Oh, okay. I'm still going to call you a jerk. I'm not going to cut that out.
Works for me. Whatever.
Because I'm mad at you for not laughing at my Ryan Dempster joke.
Well, you know what? At least it was better than his impression of Harry Carey.
Everything is better than that. Hemorrhoids are better than that.
All of the worst puns I've ever come up with in my life are better than that.
And in the Western Conference, I'm going to say, I think it's the Hawks.
Yeah,
I know
too.
It sounds homerish, but
yeah.
If you're betting on the Western Conference, are you taking any other team? I don't think so. We've seen how the Hawks have played against the Wild lately. Very well.
Yeah.
You know, Minnesota's really talented and really fast, but I don't see much of a system there. I think Matt McClure said on Twitter that Bruce Boudreau's, hey guys, go get him. Coaching system is not necessarily going to work in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So
yeah,
we'll see. Like we said, they're stacked, they're loaded, they're kicking ass in a regular season. The Hawks went 9-1 in February and barely made a dent in their divisional lead.
Yeah, they're still, 5 points out?
5 points out. The Wild have a game in hand as well. So, they're playing great, but it's a different story when the playoffs start. So we'll see. We'll see what the Wild have. I'm interested. If they somehow get through the Hawks or the Hawks get out in the first round, I'm going to be rooting for them. I like what they've done. I like their team. I like their players. It's, I hope they do well because another legitimate contender in the Hawks division is really good for the sport. And it's really good for, hockey in Chicago and Minnesota,
obviously. There is one other Western Conference team that I feel like could potentially work their way into that conversation with Chicago and Minnesota.
Okay.
Anaheim. I think Anaheim, they've got, a very interesting team. They've got, good strengths in certain areas. I thought the Patrick Eves trade was really good for them. There's one thing about Anaheim, though, that I don't like. And that's the guy on the bench. I think Randy Carlyle is a buffoon. And I do not understand why they brought him back. I just think that was the wrong move to make. And that's the one reason why I look at the Ducks and I don't put them quite in the category of Chicago and Minnesota.
That's totally fair. But you're right. When you are that loaded with talent as the Ducks are, they should be, and big physical talent too.
Oh yeah.
I know that's not as important as it used to be in the NHL, but...
no human being can withstand that kind of punishment for seven games.
Well, you know what? He was kind of right, because they almost didn't.
No, they did not. Yeah, they were very close to not withstanding it, but then they did. So, right. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting, but again, I'm not picking against the Hawks, and I know, again, I sound really homerish, but from what I've seen lately, you got Jonathan Toews back healthy, just kicking ass, the number one star of the month. Much to the chagrin of the Predators fans, who do have a little bit of a beef.
A very legitimate beef, because Philip Forsberg was bonkers in February. He was crazy good.
Yeah, 10 goals in 5 games, is that what he did?
I think it was 11. Yeah, 10 goals in 5 games. I think he had 11 total for the month, so...
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Yeah, by the way, speaking of Predators, I made a fantasy hockey trade. Finally made a hockey trade.
I gotta make one.
I acquired Ryan Johansson in exchange for Nino Niederreiter. What do you think?
That's exciting.
I think it was a good trade for me. I have made it a point this season to have a lot of versatility among my wingers, and I parlayed that into another center, and I think I probably got the best center group in the entire league. Just saying.
Solid. Engenberger keeps proposing trades to me, and I keep rejecting him just to be a jerk.
But he gave me a good one this morning. That's who I made the Johansson trade with, was Engenberger.
He wants to shake it up. I got to find it. I'm going to accept it, Engenberger. I just have to get my app up and do it. Let me grab it here. I'm just scrolling through my phone. This is riveting, riveting stuff. Okay, I'm going to get Mikko Koivu, and he's going to get Braden Schenn. So I'll take that deal. It's my guy.
Well, yeah, because everyone knows you love Mikko Koivu, so naturally, yeah, that's going to be the trade you're going to make.
Yes, he went for my soft spot, and he got it. last week we debuted a brand new segment, so let's get to it again. It is now time for the Sin Bin.
Let's enter the Sin Bin on the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast.
You go to the box, 2 minutes by yourself, and you feel shame, and then you get free.
James, would you like to go first in this week's edition of the Sin Bin?
As you guys know, I am not a Catholic, so I don't strictly observe Lent. I normally don't give stuff up, but this year I decided that I was going to try. I was going to give something up for Lent this year, and I decided on two things that I was going to pick between. One was alcohol, and the other was soda. I decided I cannot live without beer. Let that sit in your head for a second. You can make any judgments you want. I don't care. I decided to give up soda for Lent. I woke up at about 8:30 this morning and started working and getting ready for NHL draft deadline stuff, or NHL trade deadline stuff. Walked over to my refrigerator, grabbed a cherry Coke out of the fridge, drank the entire thing, and as I put the can down when I finished, I realized that it took me less than 9 hours to screw up my Lent thing.
If you looked at it, said, I know I gave this up, but I'm going to do it anyway, that's different. But if you went to your fridge, casually grab one, drink it, and you're like, oh, crap, I forgot, that's not you. It was an honest mistake. Those happen during Lent.
I still feel like less than 9 hours, though. I feel like that has to be some kind of a record for screwing up.
Well, see, it just dawned on me that I did the same thing today.
Oh!
I didn't even realize it. I made sure I did not have meat with my breakfast. I had a blueberry muffin.
Uh-huh.
And then for lunch... Mitch treated everybody to cheeseburgers from Tavern at the Park. I ate it, 5 hours ago, and it just took this conversation for me to realize that I had meat on Ash Wednesday. It was a totally honest, just like, cool, burgers, that sounds good, because it's not on your mind all the time.
See, so, now we're taking Sin Bin to a literal level that I don't think we anticipated doing.
Listen, I know Jesus well, okay?
You and him are tight, yeah, I know. We've heard the stories.
He doesn't care if you make a mistake, even if you have a moment of weakness. The intention is there, and if you do your best, God and Jesus and both of them are not going to be upset with you. So I think that's just kind of my rule of thumb in general. Whether you're an atheist or a Christian or a Muslim or a Jew or whatever, just do your best to be a good person, and you'll be fine. Is that fair?
Hey, man, that's some good life advice, man. Don't be an asshole, treat people right, and you're good.
All right, it's time for me to confess my multiple sins, even though I just
did
one.
Multiple.
All right, do you want the hockey one or the non-hockey one first?
Well, I figure since we're already on the non-hockey track, why don't we go there first?
All right, are you aware of who Rachel Dolezal is?
I've heard the name. I could not pick her out of a lineup.
I'll remind you, she was the, I think it was last year, she was a, I forget what her job was, but she posed to be a black woman and she was white.
Oh, God.
Do you remember her with the curly hair?
Yeah.
Okay. She was in the news again this week, and she changed her name. I didn't even read it. I just saw the headline. And it just sparked my memory that I have a crush on her. I think she's super cute with her curly little hair, and she's got, like, a little button nose and a nice smile. She's got, like, kind of an Amy Poehler vibe going on. I mean, she's a detestable human being, but I think she's cute. So there's my non-hockey sin.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, all right.
No, I'm sorry, man. You're kind of on your own here.
I figured I would be.
No,
when I tell people that, they just stare at me like, "What is wrong with you?"
Yeah, I'm cool. Thanks.
I'm just being honest. I'm just being as honest as I can be. And then my hockey sin today. Yeah. You're not going to believe this, but today we saw that the Carolina Hurricanes were shopping Teuvo Teravainen.
Yes.
And my first thought, not interested.
Really?
Yeah. I don't want to go through the whole thing again.
Ah, yes. That makes sense.
As much as I like him and as much as I think he could grow to be a really good and consistent player, I don't want to go through the frustration of it again. I don't want to go through the disappointment of it again. I don't want to go through the hemming and hawing and the arguing about it again. I'm kind of glad it's over. Now that he's gone to Carolina and not turned into a superstar, I'm kind of good with it. So I know that's a shocking revelation, and it sort of surprised me, but when I saw that headline, I knew people were going to talk to me about it, and I just thought, I'm really not interested in Teuvo Teravainen returning to the Blackhawks.
I definitely think you're on the right track with that, for the record.
Thank you. Wife, do you feel better?
Yeah, I do. I felt really bad when I got done, like, drinking that soda. I was like, man, shocking lack of, like, you know, awareness. You know, I've been trying lately to be more present in every moment, just kind of like savor life kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I felt like I really let myself down with that because I was like, you know, if I had really stopped to think about that for a second as I pulled the soda out of the fridge and was drinking it, pretty sure it would have come to me a lot sooner if I had actually been, you know, doing what I've honestly been attempting to do recently in my life. So I appreciated the vote of confidence from you on that, and I definitely am gonna give it another go, I think.
All right, well, you were living life, so that's why you forgot. So you are forgiven, my
Fair
son.
Fair enough. Yeah, thank God.
All right, the Sin Bin was brought to you by our friends at Mariska's Restaurant, 604 Theodore Street in Crest Hill, just west of Route 53, family-owned and operated since 1933, third and fourth generations of the Z family serving you. Listen to this. For Lent, speaking of Lent, Icelandic cod fish sticks, like fish and chips, are available at Mariska's this week.
No way.
Yes. I want to go tonight, and Hope said, let's just go on the weekend. I said, okay, that sounds good. Yeah, two-piece beer-battered Icelandic cod with salad and French bread. That is the special on all Fridays in Lent and tonight at Mariska's. So make sure you go there. Of course, if you go on a day that's not, by the way, it's $9.95 for all that. That is ridiculously cheap. So
that's a really good deal.
If you go there on a non-meat day and you want to enjoy some of their other offerings, the Poor Boy is world famous. That's their thing. That's their specialty. Make sure you try that the first time you go to Mariska's. They got great steaks, seafood, chops, everything you need. A full menu for carryout, a full bar with craft beers, banquet facilities for groups of up to 110 people. So visit them at Mariska's.com and check them out on Facebook at Facebook.com/Mariska's. Open 7 days a week and close only on Christmas, Easter, the 4th of July, and Thanksgiving. And James, with that, it's time to debut another new segment. This one sort of stumbled upon me and Hope this week, or last week. We were sitting around, we were watching hockey and talking about jerseys. And me and you have talked about the Minnesota Wild jerseys a lot. And we asked my six-year-old daughter, Addie, her opinion on the Wild jersey. So it's time for us to introduce Addie's Fashion Corner. Hi, Addie.
Hi.
Okay, you see this jersey on my phone, the Minnesota Wild jersey?
Yep.
It's the white, it's the Minnesota Wild road jersey. Can you describe what the jersey looks like? Go ahead.
So, it looks like it has a lot of decorations, and it really looks good because I like how the laces are, like, by...
Up on the chest there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I like how the numbers are on the back, and then on each of the sleeves, the numbers.
Yeah, that looks cool.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what animal that is on the front of the jersey there?
I have no idea.
Okay. That's a bear. Does that look like a bear to you?
Nope, not at all.
Okay, and do you see what they're trying to do with the bear?
Yeah.
There's a moon and a star and a forest and a river. Do you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Do you like that? Do you think that's cool?
Yeah, that's really cool.
Okay, what would you do to make this jersey better, Eddie?
Actually, I would change the lace color.
Oh. They're green now. What would you change it to?
I would change it to probably red or yellow.
Red or yellow. That's a really great thought. Addie, thank you. We really enjoyed our first version of Addie's Fashion Corner.
You're welcome.
We'll talk to you next week.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
And there was your first edition of Addie's Fashion Corner, sponsored by Triple Threat Sports.
Yeah.
You know Triple Threat Sports is the best place to go to get your jerseys lettered, NHL, NFL, whatever. But did you know they're also the best place to go if your team needs jerseys too? Whether you're an elite travel, high school, or college program that needs to outfit hundreds of kids, or if you're a beer and pizza league team with 12 players, Triple Threat can put you in pro-quality jerseys at pricing you can afford. Triple Threat can work with you on every aspect of the job too. Logo design, fitting, apparel for off-ice, you name it. And you don't have to be a hockey player to wear uniforms from Triple Threat. They can get uniforms and apparel for all sports, baseball, softball, football, lacrosse, and more. So for more info, call Chris at 708-478-6090. That's 708-478-6090. Or email him for more info at chris@triplethreatsports.com. Triple Threat Sports, if you can wear it, they can make it. I think that went very well.
I think that went very smoothly, yes.
She did a terrific job. Next week, I got to get her some headphones. She couldn't hear you. She was hard set on doing it this week, so I couldn't say... We're going to wait. She really wanted to do it. She was really excited to do it, so we had to let her. Who's going to tell a six-year-old no?
Not me.
By the way, Addie was in her full Rey from Star Wars costume during that whole thing.
Aha. Yes. Before we get to the emails, I did want to mention one quick thing, and I'm curious on your thoughts of this. Obviously, the Blackhawks are playing the Penguins tonight. It's Wednesday night when we're recording this. Of course, tonight is Wednesday night rivalry. Do you really, why? Can't you just, like, for a week say, you know what, screw the branding, we don't need to do it, because no one in their right mind thinks the Blackhawks and the Penguins are rivals, right?
I think the perceived rivalry is Taves and Crosby.
I guess, but is that really much of a rivalry?
They've only played each other, what, once? Twice?
It feels like a handful of times. Speaking of which, today is the 3-year anniversary of the Stadium Series game, which I think was their first ever meeting.
Correct. And one of the finest moments there was Taves was mic'd up, and Crosby dove, and he called him on it and was ragging on him.
He was, and I really enjoyed that. So if they want to focus on that aspect of it, the Crosby versus Taves thing, I'll listen. But the teams themselves are not rivals in any kind of way.
No, you're right. You've got the Cup Final, obviously. But you know, that's
the
like
hell
the White
remembers so- that.
Of course, it's like the White Sox and Dodgers, like World Series rematch. When was that? Like 50 years ago?
Yeah.
No one cares.
Yeah, or when the White Sox play the Astros. Now that they're both in the same league, it's like that's cool.
All right, I'm with you on that. But you know what? I gotta say, they're trying. They're trying to market. They've got the Star Sunday, where they make sure star players are highlighted all the time. That's a good idea. They're trying. It's baby steps. Excuse me, that was gross. It's baby steps for this league when almost every marketing decision they make is wrong. When they do come up with something that's somewhat cute or thematic, I guess you got to give them some support.
Are they doing the ISOCAM thing, by the way, on the website like they were a couple of years ago?
You know, I have stopped trying to use the website because it's such trash that I don't even really bother, so I couldn't tell you.
I'm not going to talk too much smack, being that, you know, NBC employs me, etc., but yeah, they need to do better.
I don't think the NBC that employs you, though, is responsible for the hockey coverage decisions.
Fair enough.
Yeah. You're allowed to have an opinion. Come on. That's what you're paid for. Now are you ready for emails?
Yes, now I am ready for emails. Thank you for indulging me in that little brief foray into NHL marketing.
Let's do it.
Email the guys at madhousepod@gmail.com or follow them on Twitter @madhousepod.
The email segment, as always, is sponsored by the Black Oak. A great addition, a newish addition to the South Suburbs. The Black Oak is a full-service restaurant and tavern located at 9630 South Pulaski in Oaklawn. The Black Oak serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner with hours from 7 a.m. to 2 a.m. 7 days a week with signature burgers consisting of a proprietary blend of beef brisket, beef chuck and short rib, and a steak sandwich made from Australian Wagyu sirloin. You're sure to love every bite. With 13 TVs, you're sure to catch every minute of the Blackhawks, so stop by for an outstanding meal and stay for the great atmosphere. Contact the Black Oak at 708-572-4500 or on Facebook at facebook.com/Black Oak Tavern. The Black Oak, the South Suburbs' finest casual upscale dining. We talked about Marishka's beer-battered Icelandic cod. Now is a great time to go to the Black Oak and try their awesome fish tacos. They are amazeballs, as the kids say.
As the kids say nowadays, yeah, in the parlance of our times.
Yes. Okay, so a little bit of an update to our email segment. For whatever reason, our podcast has blown up over the last, what, 2 or 3 months?
Yeah.
Once again in February, we had over 6,000 downloads. That doesn't even count people that just stream it. That doesn't count people that just listen to it, you know, on the Patreon site, or the, I'm sorry, the Podomatic site. We have a butt ton of listeners. With that comes a butt ton of emails. This week we got 50 emails. So obviously we're not going to be able to get to all of them. I went through and I sort of randomly picked some of the ones we're going to get on. We have a lot of regulars. Because we have so many new emailers, I want to make sure I get their questions in. I'm sure our regulars like Salsa Shark and Ginger Burger and those people will understand if they get a week off. We'll answer your questions via email, but we can't possibly get to all of them. We want to get some new people in this week. So with that qualifier, our first email comes from Peter K. He says, "Hey, gents from sunny Queensland."
Oh, nice, dude. That's awesome.
He's responding to our homework assignment. Last week, we asked people how their feelings on Patrick Kane have evolved from last summer to now. We were sort of conflicted still, you and I, and we want to know how the listeners felt. We got a lot of response to that. So again, we can't get to all of them, but some of the shorter ones we're going to highlight here. So as he said, my homework assignment, I appreciate Kane as a hockey player and do find it easy to enjoy what he does on the ice, but it stops there for me. I think he's got a lot to be desired as a quality human being. With the off-ice controversies over the years, it'd be great to see a heartfelt charity effort by him to at-risk women to show support towards the world's most victimized people group. Just a thought. It's a great idea. And you
it's a great,
saw
tremendous idea.
Andrew Shaw, who used the F-A-G word, I guess I just spelled it, last year in the playoffs, has gone out of his way to become a somewhat of an advocate for gay rights. And he's the representative in Montreal for You Can Play. And that's a good thing. Maybe it's not totally sincere, but it's hard to question that when he said, look, I was very apologetic. I was very sorry. I didn't really think about what I was saying when I said it. And now he's taking action to back up those words. It would be great to see Patrick Kane do something. And we see very little of that from him. And maybe he does it behind the scenes and you do see him at the hospital visits and things like that. But, you know, Duncan Keith has an event and Brent Seabrook has an event and Jonathan Toews is out there helping people all the time. It'd be nice to see Kaner get out there a little bit more often than we've seen so far.
And I do understand the idea of, like, not wanting to appear disingenuous, but you know what? I'd rather you appear disingenuous and actually do something to help than the alternative, which is to kind of brush it under the rug. So I definitely agree with that, and I think that was a tremendous – that's a very good response to that question, I think.
Yeah, and all of them are very thoughtful. Here's a question, too. He says, can you break down how to do a Chicago accent and keywords to incorporate? You got to get the sausage.
Yep.
And it's like
Polish
sort of
sausage. My friend. It's you not friend. It's Frent. Like yeah, F-R-E-N-T. Frent.
Yeah. Yep. Anything that ends with D ends with a T.
Anything that ends Bears.
It's not running, it's running. Everything is, I have a very thick Chicago
accent.
You
also have to add S's to everything. I'm going to go down to the Jules. Go down to the Jules and get some fried chicken.
The Jules.
Yep.
Yeah, that's it. It's, you just got to get the long A's and you got to, and the tricks, you know, it's pop.
Yep.
It's not soda, it's pop. You're going to go get a beef.
I'm a terrible Illinois native because I say soda, so.
Yeah, you're terrible.
Well, you know, I'm terrible for a lot of reasons. That doesn't shock me.
That's probably the worst. But yeah, you're on the right track. I like your enthusiasm.
Yeah, man. Come to Illinois from, God, Queensland. What the hell are we doing in our lives that we're, our podcast is reaching other continents, man.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
How could you not be happy about that?
I'm all thrilled beyond belief.
Email here from Liz. She also has a thought on the Patrick Kane thing. This one's a little bit longer, but I want to make sure I got a woman's point of view. Just catching up on the podcast, and I want to share my perspective on Kane. I agree with you 100% that I don't have any issues with anyone that can just can't ever cheer him for being or the Blackhawks again. Sorry, I'll say that again. I agree with you 100% that I don't have any issues with anyone that just can't ever cheer for him or the Blackhawks again, especially because the way the team handled things at the time, it was very tone deaf at best. I'm a grown woman without kids, so I don't expect 20-something dudes playing sports to be role models, but I was concerned by Patrick Kane's off-ice behavior for years before the events of the summer of 2015 because I thought the guy had a serious drinking problem that everyone was ignoring as long as he was successful on the ice. The events of 2015 were disturbing, and it was disgusting how it was handled all around, but I don't think the DA covered anything up, and I believe that it was fair that the charges were dropped. So there, that's pretty much the thoughts there. She said, I won't be buying my niece a Kane jersey ever, but I'm glad he's doing well on and off the ice.
Okay.
One thing I'll say is there was a drinking problem and it was addressed. It was something that the team was very aware of. It was something that they, wanted to nip in the bud the best they can. That's why when what happened last summer, we heard reports of John McDonough just being nuclear angry about the whole thing. That he even put himself in that situation.
Yeah,
so,
regardless of what the outcome was of the investigation, the organization was not happy with the way he conducted himself.
Definitely. Thank you for the email, Liz, and thanks for listening. Ginger Burger! I gotta lighten it up here. He says, like usual, I don't have a hockey question. Recently, I got a Johnny Cash earworm and got pulled into nostalgic songs from my youth. What artists bring you back to your youth?
Oh, God. That we I don't know, this may, I guess my answer could conceivably be a Sinbin thing, so I want Jay to go first.
Okay. My favorite band when I was young was Extreme, the guys that sang More Than Words. And I know every time I say that, people laugh at me, but that was an extremely talented and extremely unique band that never got the recognition they deserved. It might not be your thing, but they were not your typical hair metal band. They had a lot of funk. They used a lot of horns. Very, very influenced by Queen. They admit as much. If you want to be impressed by Extreme, go to YouTube and look up their performance at the Freddie Mercury Memorial Concert. It was outstanding. They did I guess you call it a montage, right? Or a medley? A medley is the word
medley,
in music.
There you go. Yep.
Of Queen's hits, and it was awesome. So that was the band that, whenever I hear them, and I still have them on my Spotify favorites playlist. I have about 900 songs on there. And they pop up every now and again, and it always takes me back. And it's still a band that I listen to with regularity. I'll pop them on the car ride. It's a band I love, and they take me back to high school and grade school when I started getting into them. So there, okay. That's my answer.
Yeah. There are a couple that I can go with. One of them is Phil Collins and Genesis. Apparently, when I was a baby, Sussudio was like my favorite song ever.
My dad used to jam that song all the time.
Yeah, apparently, like, when I was in the crib, my mom would put Sussudio on, and I would, like, kind of nod along to the song and then eventually go to sleep. Apparently,
how could you not?
Apparently, it was, like, my favorite song. Another song specifically was Take On Me by A-ha. That was, like, my favorite song when I was, like, a toddler, and I listened to it all the time, and I always asked to listen to it. But the band that I most closely identify with my childhood and time with my parents, and this is where I'm probably going to get into Sinbin territory, is Styx. And I still listen to Styx to this day because it reminds me of when I was a kid. And I know I know they're cliche, I know they're cheesy, I know they're corny, whatever word you want to throw in front of them, I know they're all of those things, but I still listen to Styx.
Okay, fair enough. It's hard, you know, like you said, you qualified your liking of them, and there is some cheese, but they got some really good songs.
They do.
Come on. I'm done being a music snob. I used to be a music snob. If it's a song that I like, I'll listen to it. That's my philosophy. If it entertains me, I'm in. You know, I'm not going to encourage my daughter to listen to junk music, but I'm also not going to stop her from doing it.
Right.
You like what you like, and there's nothing wrong with liking what you like.
Agreed.
All right. Oh, one more, by the way, just took me back. Every year, my godparents, my Aunt Jo and my Uncle Fran, have a tree trimming party every year since I was a tiny kid until now. And they every year they play the John Denver and the Muppets Christmas album. And I have it on vinyl. I listen to it every Christmas, and I get choked up listening to it every year. It just takes me back to those parties.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it's, you know, it's John Denver and the Muppets, it's not a very serious album. Just hearing those songs brings me back to, like, a really awesome time with all my cousins and my grandparents and everything. So that's a record that brings me back, like, way, way, way back. All right.
Highly underrated Christmas movie, by the way. A Muppet Christmas Carol with Michael Caine as Scrooge.
Terrific movie.
That was a fantastic movie. Really well done.
What's great about the Muppet movies, too, is when you watch them again as an adult, you find all the humor that was left there for you that you didn't pick up on as a kid, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's like any cartoon in the 90s, though. Like, you go back and watch, like, Animaniacs or Rocko's Modern Life. There were a ton of adult jokes in those shows. And you're like, how did this air? Good God.
Yeah, you're right about, like, Ren and Stimpy was like that, too.
Yeah.
There were a lot.
Yeah.
All right, email here from Andrew Merker. He says, hey, guys, I have a hard time cheering for Kane. It seems like the NHL and Blackhawks are comfortable this year to start increasing his exposure again as he was on the All-Star Game ads and is promoting local Chevy dealers. I threw out my Kane jersey and bobblehead. When he scores, I try not to celebrate. It just seems like there are people that would serve as better faces of the franchise. Totally agree there.
Completely agree.
And then he has another question. I'm a Star Wars fan, and the other day I was thinking about how great it will be to introduce my son, 8 months. I am concerned about showing him the piece of garbage that is Episode 1. If I show it to him when he's 6 or 9 years old, will he love Jar Jar and the pod racers, or should I lie about its existence and wait until he's older so he can understand how awful it was? Much guidance I need. My advice would be to just hold off on it.
I would show the movies in the order in which they were released, honestly.
Yeah, but I would treat the prequels like the sex talk. Like, son, come here. I know you're a big fan of Star Wars. And I got to be honest with you. I was keeping something from you all these years. This is not an easy conversation to have, but it's time you've had it. There are 3 movies you don't know about. They're complete trash. Go watch them now. Feel bad about yourself. And then you'll know the pain that we've all known all these years. That's how you got to handle it. It's got to be like a very dramatic revelation of the prequels, because they are hot garbage. And especially now with Rogue One and Force Awakens and soon to be The Last Jedi, it's time to just sort of push those prequels in the background.
Speaking of movies that are forthcoming, the new Guardians of the Galaxy trailer that dropped yesterday.
Yes.
God, am I pumped for that movie.
I think I've listened to The Chain 15 times since.
Yeah, since man, I freaking love Kurt Russell, so the fact that he's going to be Star-Lord's dad.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. That movie's going to be so great.
I was surprised they revealed that in the trailer.
Me too, but you know what? It's a good hook. It gets people interested in the movie for sure.
I thought it was going to be a cliffhanger. Like, who are you? Fade to black.
Yeah. They could have handled it that way, but I think like the hardcore Marvel nerds already knew about it, so
yeah.
It wasn't something they were really trying to guard.
All right, next email comes from our guy Ryan Tennant. Actually, Ryan, I'm going to skip yours because it's infinitely long.
Sorry,
buddy. We love you. Kevin Peake. He says, so seeing that Kruger is exposed to the expansion draft, you asked on Twitter, aside from Kruger, who would you miss of any of these players? That would be Rasmussen, Caro, and Kruger.
Yeah.
He said, no, I wouldn't, but I honestly at this point would rather keep Rasmussen and Caro as centers over Kruger. Now, I like Kruger, but he is a hefty cap hit. for a third or fourth line center, and he's had past injury issues. Seems to be a real upside with Rasmussen as well. If Vegas takes Kruger, it'll be sad to see him go, but do the Hawks really lose that much if he goes? Yeah, it's I think especially since the wrist injury, we've seen a drop in his play a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. And he can't take faceoffs, which is always a little bit unnerving because then you worry about how the long-term prognosis on that wrist. So, yeah. I don't know, man. I'm kind of in a mode where I think it's still a loss to your roster if you lose him. But there are benefits to it, too, I guess. So you kind of have to take the good with the bad, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. I think of those guys he mentioned, definitely I think that Rasmussen has the highest upside. I've been really impressed with what I've seen from him.
I completely agree.
All right, here's a question from Ken Bockelman. Says, hello, men. Looking at the standings, it would appear that the final wild card spot in each conference will be up for grabs going down to the final few games. Which two teams do you guys see filling those two spots?
Well, I know what this means. I have to look up the NHL standings.
I have them right here for you.
Oh, what a guy you are.
So right now, the current wild card teams are Nashville
with
73 points. Anaheim.
Wait, Nashville's a wild card team?
No, I'm sorry.
I thought they had the three seed in the Central.
Yes, they do. Calgary and St. Louis have the current wild card spots.
Thank you. Okay.
Calgary is significantly ahead of St. Louis. They have 72 points. St. Louis has 67. Behind the Blues are the Kings with 66. The Jets with 60. And I think from there we're going to know the Stars are going to fall off. It won't be anybody else. So Calgary, St. Louis, or the Kings. Who do you got for that last playoff spot?
I'm going to go for the wild card spots. I'm going to go with Calgary and the Kings.
I agree.
I think the Blues are going to fall off. I really do. The Shattenkirk trade, I think, is going to kind of lower them even further than they already are. I believe they're on like a four-game losing streak right now. I think they'd won like six in a row under Mike Yeo, and then they just have kind of started hitting the wall again. I don't see them. I don't think they've got the goaltending, and I don't really think they've got the scoring either. I think they fall out of the race in the West. I think it's going to be Calgary and L.A.
Okay, and in the Eastern Conference, you've got the wildcard teams currently are the Rangers with 82 points.
So they're going to be in the playoffs, whether it's as a wild card or one of the division spots. They're going to be in.
Definitely.
So realistically, we're only talking about one wild card spot.
Right. So you got the Leafs with 69. Nice. The Islanders and Panthers with 68 each, and the Flyers with 65. I'm going to go with the way it is right now. I think it's going to be the Rangers and Leafs. Leafs will get that last spot. They got better at the deadline. The other teams did not, and they seem to be the ones going for it. So I like what I've seen from them. The young players are only getting better, so I think the Leafs are going to make the playoffs and lose in the first round.
What I think is going to happen is I think that Florida is going to get hot. And I'm going to go ahead and say it. I think Ottawa is going to fall off the path a little bit. And I'm going to go ahead and say Boston and Toronto both make it as division teams. And I'm going to say that the wild card teams will be the Rangers and the Panthers.
Okay. I like that. That's a bold prediction, my friend. But you're right. Ottawa, 72 points. They're in second place in the Atlantic, but that's not saying much.
Boy, they also have games in hand, too, but I just don't trust them, man. I really don't.
They didn't get better either, really. Do you think Burrows makes a huge difference for them?
No.
Nah, I don't either. But they do. They locked him up to two more years as soon as they traded for him. Oh, boy. By the way, the Hawks were interested in him. I don't know if we discussed that on Saturday, but he was one of the guys the Hawks had an eye on. They were looking to sort of upgrade the toughness. On the bottom six, bring in a guy like Burrows who's physical and can score, but it didn't work out. I mean, Ottawa gave up a lot to get him, and the Hawks no way were going to match that package. So that one fell apart. Maybe they're better off without him. Who knows? It would have been interesting, though, to see the reaction when Alex Burrows got traded to the Blackhawks.
Oh, God, yeah, that would have been interesting is one way to put it.
Yes. Outrage might be the other one.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast. A couple things I want to mention before we go. If you'd like to support the podcast, make sure you visit our Patreon site, patreon.com/madhousepod. Lots of donation options on there, so check that out. Also, please make sure you review the podcast. Give it a 5-star review and write a little something about it. That helps us move up the charts so people can find us more easily. Helps us move up the iTunes ratings as well. And there's one more week to help out the Rush Hospital Epilepsy Center via 26shirts.com. They have 2 shirt designs now going to support my sister's cause. If you don't know, my sister passed away on January 19th. She was 36 years old after a long battle with epilepsy. And we have this charity thing going with 26shirts.com. Check my Twitter. I've tweeted out the link several times, so it should be very easy to find. $8 from each shirt goes directly to the charity. So jump on that. There's a Duncan Teeth design and a Welcome to the Madhouse design. Both very, very cool. So make sure to check that out. And if you'd like to just donate, that would be fine as well. So with that, I want to thank everybody for listening to the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast, which has been brought to you by Triple Threat Sports. For all your team outfitting needs, call Chris at 708-478-6090. The Black Oak in Oakland, the South Suburbs' finest casual upscale dining. And Marishka's in Crest Hill, family-owned and operated since 1933. James, I think we're going to talk, what, maybe this weekend or early next week?
I think it's Saturday might be a good day. We'll have a couple of Blackhawks games to preview and recap. And, yeah, things are going to start really picking up steam here, man. We're entering the home stretch.
Can't wait. All right, man, we'll talk to you soon. Everybody, thanks a lot for listening. We'll talk to you very, very soon. Again, thanks for listening to the Madhouse Chicago Hockey Podcast. For my partner, James Neveau, I'm Jay Zawoski. We will talk to you next time.